head into the Ringerverse to stay up to date with all things superheroes and nerd culture entertainment. Hosted by a rotating lineup of superfans at The Ringer, including Mallory Rubin and Van Lathan, shows will provide instant reactions to blockbuster releases, insightful backstories on canon, and mind-bending theories, as well as fresh takes on the latest news and rumors. Check out The Ringerverse on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Major League Baseball. A lot is going on in the world of sports right now, but don't forget the 2024 baseball season. It's officially here. Some pretty exciting things to look forward to. Can the star-studded Dodgers, can they make the World Series? Can Mookie Betts break my heart again? How about the young Orioles? How about the defending champs, the Rangers, trying to become the first back-to-back champs in over two decades? See how far they'll go. Get in on the action by visiting your local ballpark or any ballpark, or you can just go to MLB.com, tap the banner, to learn more. Baseball is something else. This episode is brought to you by Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Loom help power the collaboration needed for teams to accomplish what would otherwise be impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. That's why millions of teams around the world, including 75% of the Fortune 500, trust Atlassian software for everything from sports exploration and green energy to delivering pizza and podcasts. Whether you're a team of two, 200 or 2 million, Atlassian software is built to help keep you connected and moving together as one.
Hello and welcome to the Ringer Prestige TV podcast. It's Flyover Country with Ryan Russillo and Chris Ryan. We're doing Yellowstone episodes 4 and 5 of season 4. We skipped one because of Thanksgiving. Now we've got the leftover plate. Got like a big feast for you, Ryan. What's going on?
I'm fired up, man. Fired up.
So are you fired up because they've just like pot committed to this Jimmy thing where like there's a second show inside of Yellowstone that's setting up the 4-6's ranch? Because I'm actually starting to come all the way around on this.
Yeah, because, you know, we were down on Jimmy a little bit there. When we opened up, I think this season, we go, that slight moment you thought Jimmy might be dead. Be honest. How did you feel? And it's pretty mean.
Yeah.
Revisiting that thought. But I love the 4-6's. I almost don't know if we should start the pod with this or end it. But when Jimmy's there at the end, after hanging out with a couple different people, and one's Buster Welch, who's 91. He's a real guy. He's a 9-time world champ. And that's the Texan cowboy. I don't know what his deal is. His delivery.
The other guy's Barry Corbin.
Barry Corbin's 81. He's the guy sitting with Buster. He's a Texas Tech guy. He was a Marine.
He's in Northern Exposure, No Country for Old Men. Yeah.
Ghost Dad.
Yes.
He is in Ghost Dad, for those that know. And so that line where the other cowboy grabs Jimmy, he's like, you ready to work? And then he's like, hey, you take anything from listening to Buster and then Corbin? And he goes, there's three gods in Texas. The Almighty itself, Buster Welch, George Strait. And you're just like, that was perfect. It was my favorite line so far of the season.
Yeah. You know, so this started out as, I thought, a backdoor pilot. Like the first two episodes, there's the 1883 extended sequence that is essentially like a trailer for that spinoff show. And then this Jimmy subplot, which is Jimmy's going to go to Texas and work on this ranch to, I don't know, like, you know, find himself.
They're trying to inject, like actually hook him up to an IV, a Texas cowboy is what it feels like.
Yeah. And it's half punishment, half outward bound kind of thing. And Taylor Sheridan, the actual, as an actor, is playing a big part in that is Travis, who's the horse trainer who's going to take Jimmy to Texas. And you're kind of like, okay, cool. You guys are setting up this spinoff. We'll see Jimmy in a year and a half or whenever they get this thing off the ground. And instead, this Jimmy plotline has now taken up, I would say, as much oxygen as any other main character on the show, where we are following him down on his journey to Texas and we'll likely like spend time with him over the course of the season. That's actually like, if you deprogram your brain from like everything needs to be moving towards an endpoint or some sort of plot resolution, and you're just like, this is just hanging out in this universe, I think it's actually pretty fun. I just don't know really what it has to do with what's going to happen on the Dutton Ranch this season.
Yeah, really good question, because as we've mentioned before, I always love the authentic horse part of this. The 4-6 ranch thing. I mean, if you think about what Sheridan's doing here, this is pretty impossible to pull off as a creator where you go, yeah, actually my passion is, as we saw with Travis, who's played by Taylor, in episode 4, where they show him actually doing some of the stuff with horse, you know, I don't even know all the fucking terminology. Imagine if Matthew Weiner was the biggest oil painting enthusiast. Okay. And then all of a sudden Mad Men veered off into the world of oil painting, like as this subplot to everything else that was going on, because he was just that passionate. Like, this is kind of crazy that Taylor's pulling this off and going beyond the Yellowstone Ranch storyline. I'm going to sprinkle in what is my biggest passion, and that's training horse, cutting horses, and this ranch that he's now, I guess he bought, right? Is that what you're saying?
He's the face of the investment group that bought the 4-6s. Yeah.
Right. So I'm going to find a way to put all the stuff in. But every time you would think, like, I can't imagine pitching that to the studio. Granted, he kind of got like a blank canvas, do whatever he wanted, because Paramount's like, go ahead, just do your thing. You've been amazing on everything else you've done. So to force it in and then still have it work and me look forward to those scenes and like the delivery, like when the Texan says the same thing about three gods and Bush Welch, and he's saying, I hope you got a big dick, Jimmy. And it's perfect.
Yeah.
I mean, these guys have done a really good job of feeling authentic and not, hey, cameo of person that's never been on TV before. It's working. And that doesn't work very often.
Yeah. So when you're watching it and you're just like, Jesus, like this landscape is just amazing. These characters are kind of just absolute originals. And I'm really interested in seeing this ranch. And then you remember you're watching Yellowstone. And I think if I had like anything I would say is just that, it's not even a critique as much as it is just an observation that there is one thing that's happening on this season that is of the utmost urgency. And that is Jamie has discovered that his biological father is likely, I mean, they're playing a little bit like hide and seek with it, but in all likelihood, Jamie's biological father orchestrated a multi-pronged hit attempt on all members of the Dutton family other than Jamie. And it failed. And now they're searching for this killer. And Jamie has discovered it's his biological father. And that is treated as kind of like a, we'll get to it when we get to it kind of plot point in the show. While all this other stuff, be it Jimmy's trip to Texas or Casey and Monica, like looking at Montana Zillow, or Beth driving to Salt Lake City to fire a guy, or John getting into like kind of falling for an environmentalist, like, all of this other stuff is happening, and you're like, yeah, but Jamie's dad went Michael Corleone on all these people. We got to get to this, which we don't really until the very end of the 5th episode. Do you mind that this stuff is all being kind of treated with equal frequency?
No, it's a good question, because I hadn't really thought about that. Like, all right, how much should we veer off into some of these other things? Because I think a lot of us would admit, like even with The Sopranos, you would go, Meadow episode.
Yeah.
You know, as we've mentioned before, and any the stuff that we've done is that Meadow rounded out the Tony character, and you need that kind of stuff. But these storylines are kind of existing on their own. And even though, you know, I haven't always loved Jimmy, but I understood what his role was to kind of balance you out in the bunkhouse with all these guys that are like really rough around the edges, guys that feel more likely to be in a ranch bunkhouse for the rest of their lives. I'm good with it. Like, I thought in episode 4, Travis driving down is hilarious.
Yeah.
Like, he just, the delivery of his lines where he's like, hey, do you want me to drive a little bit? And Travis is like, $125,000 truck, $150,000 rig, $2 million worth of horses, I drive. And then you're like, okay, he's just being a dick. And then when he's like, Roadhouse is the best movie ever. Yeah. I want to be just like Sam Elliott.
What,
like,
with Swayze's hair. When are the mullets coming back?
Yeah. And I mean, he knows they're kind of stupid and goofy lines, but it's perfect because you're going, wait, you're riding shotgun with a guy that's favorite movie. He thinks the greatest movie of all time is Roadhouse. So I've enjoyed that stuff. Even though, you know, look, I don't think any of us would say that Monica teaching on a college campus were our favorite scenes, because just not what you're signing up for when you're watching this show. But can I ask you something though about the Jamie and the father part of this, the biological father part of it? They were so obvious in the delivery. You want to talk about a quarterback staring down his receiver, and that as we're trying to figure it out, because at the end of season 3, they tease us a little bit that Jamie's involvement could be the most, you know, easy connection to this, because Rip calls Jamie, and Jamie's like, I don't think you should talk to me anymore.
Right.
So you're like, wait a minute. Okay, so was Jamie actually behind this? Then we find out that he isn't. And then they deliver that storyline to you in the previous episode being like, it's going to be Jamie's father. That honestly, Chris, it was so obvious. I thought, wait, are we being played here again? Because they're making it too obvious that it is his father.
Yeah, so there's some weird TV stuff happening in this one where we never actually get a confirmative, if that's a word,
confirmation.
Head nod from the jailhouse stoolie guy.
Yes.
Who's like, I will give you this name for immunity. And they're like, was this my dad? And the guy is like, but doesn't quite nod, and it cuts away. And in that scene, they're also cross-cutting to Garrett, played by Will Patton, coming back to Jamie's new house and being like, there's a knock at the door. Hello? And it's unclear as like who it is or like whether, like how that whole scene is taking place. And then we get to the very end of the episode and they're like, do you have a secret to tell me? And Garrett's like, do you have a secret to tell me? And it's like very unclear as to whether or not is Garrett actually like, you know, orchestrating this whole thing where he's like found Jamie's, the mother of Jamie's child and his son and like kind of brought them in. And now he's going to be like, if you give me up, like your kids are going to be in danger. Or is he actually going to try and make a pitch for, I tried to eliminate the rest of your family so that you, your wife, your son, or your girlfriend, your son, and me can sort of take over this area. I don't know. I think it's a little bit of like, I think I probably prefer it a little bit more straightforward at this point. Like I would just be like, if this guy did it, like, let's just like address it head on. But I understand the need to kind of drag it out. It is the central mystery of the series, the season though. So I guess it's like they've got to spin their wheels a little bit.
I don't know if you remember off the top of your head. I hate when Simmons and I are doing NBA pods and we'll like throw out a random salary and it'll be like, is it this? I'm like, well, look, can we look it up?
Yeah.
And on this one, I couldn't remember the last time Jamie's girlfriend was in play in one of the storylines here.
That's right.
I mean, didn't it feel a little bit like Truman Show where it's like, hey, Truman, it's your dad. He didn't drown.
Yeah. Like, I had forgotten that she was like, I won't let you see your son until you like disassociate from your family. Like I completely forgotten Jamie's, like the reason why Jamie's son wasn't around. I thought it was one of those things that they kind of like yada yada off the show.
So yeah, I'm looking it up now. I think the last time she was in an episode was episode 9 of season 2.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I might be wrong. I mean, I'm just going IMDb on this one here last minute. So when she shows up, I'm like, whoa. And now we're completely derailed from getting to what we thought was going to be the bottom of, you know, sort of a mid-season reveal that Jamie's biological father is behind this, because that's what every clue is led us. I mean, honestly, they're telling you, they're screaming at you that this is it. And like I said before, it's almost so obvious. I wonder if they're fucking with us. But when she just rolls in and it's great, it's ready made. Like the kid is beyond the alien baby phase. She still looks great. He's got a place, you know, and if anything needs welding, his dad's on the scene. So that goes from really intense to, all right, we're good here.
Yeah.
And I didn't think she was about that life. I really didn't. You know, she was going after him when he was a politician.
Yeah, she was like his worked at his office, right?
Yeah, she had like hoping to be on MSNBC for some TV hit vibes in 5 years. Not, you know, let's make clothing on site.
We could talk about some of the other characters. My big thing, you know, with John this season is he's obviously still recovering from his injuries, but I thought they actually did a nice job in the opening of episode 5. And it is sort of the undercurrent. Like it's a question that's out there that isn't probably going to get a satisfactory answer, but you know, what is this house if it's not full of these kids and not full of their drama? And he's just kind of like, here I am just drinking alone at sunset, eating by myself, washing myself and dragging my ass into bed. And he's, you know, grappling with this idea that like, would you rather have like a house that's full of people and chaos or basically be alone with Beth drinking herself to sleep every night? The John stuff though, like he was with the governor, right? And then they eventually broke their relationship off. Maybe this thing with the environmentalist is just going to be, you know, a reaching across the aisle so that he can just better understand the conservation movement. I don't know if that's something Taylor is interested in talking about, but it seems like they're setting her up to be his love interest.
Yeah, it's definitely. I mean, when he starts the episode, you can't wash the lonely off. And then it's like, hey, Beth, what are you going to do over there? Go into a brownout after 5 or 6 while I try to sleep over here? All right, cool. Have fun.
Yeah.
And you make a great point. Like, what is the house? What is the ranch? If it's just him, that's not the point. That's never been the point. I mean, that's been a constant theme throughout. And him being happy that she's drinking over by the fireplace, even if it's weird, in his bed while he goes to sleep, he was just kind of cool with it. But you're right. All right, so give me your Summer Higgins breakdown. Summer and the gang dump fake blood on themselves to protest basically the Livestock Commission building, and then they get arrested, and then John has a change. He's like, is he eating? And he says, fuck it. And then he goes and bails her out.
Yeah, he's just like,
I shouldn't have
pressed charges. Let's do a little Summer Higgins. This is my own kind of read on this, but she seems about my age, like early 40s. I'm guessing Mount Holyoke, maybe double like environmental affairs / poli-sci major.
Smith maybe?
Yeah, maybe did a little bit of time on K Street doing lobbying for Greenpeace or that kind of thing, but then realized that the real fight was out in the streets and has spent most of her time getting arrested at different protests. Bet she has parents, maybe a trust fund to give her bail money or whatever. But, you know, I mean, looks, it's Piper Perabo, who's, veteran TV actor. She's on The Big Leap on Fox right now. So this is probably just a guest turn for her on Yellowstone. But that's my read on Summer. I find naming an environmental protester Summer a little bit on the nose.
Yeah, the naming part of Laramie's still my favorite name on the entire show.
Yeah.
And we have to make sure we don't forget about Lloyd's downfall here, because we got to
get
a little Lloyd in there. But let's go full zag on who John Dutton would want to hang out with. I love that they wrote in where she leaves the jailhouse. He's like, why don't you come to my ranch? And by the way, I think Dutton dresses nicer than that guy would. He has a constant rotation of the padded sort of quilted pattern jacket thing.
The shackets. Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, yeah. I, you know, it's like we've mentioned before, it's a little Logan Roy, but Montana it.
Yeah.
And he always is dressed great. The fixtures in the shower were terrific. There's a lot of high-end stuff going on with both his wardrobe, which maybe Beth just buys it for him. And some of the
fixtures.
I gotta
say, I prefer that to the, and I don't want to get in trouble here with any of the ranch hands, but the 4.6s guys dress like Saturn car salesmen. Like the way they have like the shirts kind of tucked into the khakis.
I'm not touching that. These are real guys.
Maybe we should cut that. I know.
These are real guys.
I just don't. I mean, I understand it's like a cowboy George Strait thing to tuck the shirt in. It's just pretty funny to me.
Yeah, I don't. I think
I'm on an island on that one.
Yeah, I'm not touching that one. So back to Summer. When she says, you know, he's like, hey, when you come back to the ranch, and she's like, oh, I'm supposed to just get in a truck with a charming white male in his 50s. And I was like, there's no way that's not what that person is thinking.
Sure.
And again, if I meet somebody and the first thing they ask me is, are you going to chop me up and store me in the woods? I'll be like, maybe I'll just get your phone number. We will follow up. Maybe we won't hang out right now. If that's the first question you're asking me, we will follow up a little bit later. So I don't know. What do you think of the name?
I'm curious to know whether or not it's like, that's like a change my name legally to Summer at 18, or whether her real name is like Sarah, or, you know, and it was just like, after a while, she was just like, to embrace my Greenpeace bona fides, I'm going to change the name. I just think like, ultimately, like Taylor can crowdsource that. We could come up with a better, what would be a better name than Summer Higgins for that character?
Well, Beth is already taken.
She looks like a Jenny, maybe.
Jenny?
Yeah.
Yeah, but she wouldn't stay with Jenny because she'd want to be taken more seriously later on. Jenny with an I with a heart dot on top of the eye. I can only tell you as a someone attempting to dabble in this world, coming up with names on a TV show is way harder than you think it is. Now, I know it sounds ridiculous to be like, what's the point? Just look up names, look up baby names, and then just pick one. But you'll want to be a little, you don't want to just go, hey, this person's John, this person's Henry, this person's Meg, and on and on and on. And I'll start just writing in names from people that I know just to get through the script, knowing you're going to change it all later anyway. You know, like most of the times the pilot to whatever ends up, somebody will go through it and be like, hey, let's change some of this stuff. I remember, just as a quick aside, I've written down names of women that I spent time with. And then if somebody who I'm talking to will be like, hey, can I read something you've written? And then they'll see a name that register and they'll be like, are you still talking to that person? And I go, you know, all I was doing was trying to get through fucking 60 pages of typing.
Right.
Okay? That's right. That's, there was nothing else there. It was just simply.
So if I look at one of your scripts, am I going to find like the chief bank robber is named Colin Coward?
Yeah. That's, you know, you'd be like, oh wow, this guy sucks. Russillo hated this guy. Like every time this guy says something, he sounds like an asshole.
Let's talk a little bit about Lloyd. This is another plot line that I did not think would get so much screen time, but they're really leaning into it. Lloyd is kind of the Kemba Walker of the Dutton Ranch, just out of the rotation. And this is all stemming from
great call, by the way. Wow, thank you.
They are. It's stemming from this situation with Walker, where Walker had left and come back, and there was a lot of drama about his return, and Casey sort of spares his life and makes him cut a guy's heart out, basically, to prove that he belongs back on the ranch. Walker and Lloyd do not get along. And Lloyd started a fight with Walker, which is apparently the worst thing you can do on a ranch where mass murder occurs on a pretty regular basis. Rip beats the shit out of him and is now got him in the doghouse cleaning out stalls. This does allow for a very heartwarming subplot between Lloyd and Carter, who Lloyd is showing Carter the warmth that Rip is not. But yeah, this Lloyd plot line is tough, man. It's sad watching this guy not get to break colts and have to like teach saddle anatomy to a little kid.
Yeah, the kid was great though as they were running through. I was trying to memorize all the parts of the saddle as well, and the kid was just on it. He was great. So I think they're doing like, hey, this kid might have some cowboy in him yet.
That's right.
He's going to come back and Jimmy's going to be low man. And this kid's going to be ahead of him. I don't like the Lloyd storyline. It just went to chaos way too fast for me. I don't quite get it. Look, if I'm Lloyd and I'm 60 and I'm sleeping with Laramie and then Walker takes it from me, I'd be way worse than Lloyd is on the show. Okay. Way worse. And then I got to watch it. And at first Lloyd seemed okay with it. Cause remember he was just like, whatever, barrel racers, they're nuts. And this is a good run and I'm fine with it. And then it was like, how come he's not more mad? And now he's mad. He fought. You're right. Like the fighting rule seems rather strict for a ranch. And then Rip has to beat the shit out of him. And then when Lloyd, I guess they also did the other thing where Lloyd was bringing back the cattle that had pink eye and he kind of did it the wrong way by bringing them into the arena. And then, you know, John and Rip both got pissed at him and Walker and the rest of the cowboys were saying like, Lloyd, we're doing this wrong. So they were kind of like trying to do all these like downfall Lloyd things, but then
Lloyd loses the locker room.
Yeah, right. He's lost the locker room. They've tuned him out. They need a new message, but it's still, he's been such a positive. He's, you know, his plus minus box score has always been in the positives for multiple seasons. It's hard to see him like this. And you're wondering, okay, is he going to pivot to nurturing Charlie or is he going to burn this fucking place down? And for the longest part, I thought it was going to be the latter, but maybe that was just a little sampling of motivating us to understand. Well, like, again, why is he now going to be boys with this little kid? Well, because no one likes him right now in the bunkhouse, which is kind of bullshit anyway.
Right. I just want to get to a point in my life. I don't know what the scenario should be, but I honestly, sincerely want to be able to say to a friend of mine, God damn you for making me do this to you. Like maybe I'll just take Fennessy's car one day. And I'll be like, God damn you for making you do this.
I think you should just do it and not like just see what they're, because at least Lloyd understood it.
Yeah.
It would be way funnier if you just start doing it to people around the office and no one, they're like, why is he doing that?
Did I break some rules? Does Chris get my car now?
He's just really into Yellowstone.
Anything else you wanted to hit? I guess like the Casey Monica stuff, like Tate getting some Sweat Lodge action in. He's going to go up on a hill with Mo. I did find Monica like choosing this house in between the Yellowstone and Bozeman. That's got to be like a hour and a half commute for Casey. I mean, that's not like super convenient.
I don't think Monica cares right now. I think she has all the cards.
Yeah.
You know, I was glad to see Rainwater get in there with some Rainwater spirituality there. And I was like, all right, okay, cool. We're back on this. I mean, in episode 5, you could call it Mellowstone. It was very much like, all right, we're at the midway point here. We're going to all kind of chill out. We're going to get Dutton a girl. We're going to have Beth drive 7 hours to fire Schwarzenmeier's guy, Bobby, that poor guy. I always kind of liked him. I don't know. I was never rooting against him. Yeah.
I like him. I also found it pretty funny because she's eating breakfast with John. You figure that's probably like a little bit after dawn.
Here we go. Continuity director.
Just saying, she's eating breakfast in Montana with John at like, let's say 6:37. Huge breakfast. She's not eating. She only smokes cigarettes and drinks coffee until noon. And then she's going to drive 7 hours. It would just be really funny if she got there and they were like, yeah, we're closing up the office. It's like 5 o'clock. Can you come back tomorrow?
And with daylight savings, going down earlier, who knows? Although I imagine mountain range, she's have the sun a little bit longer.
Oh yeah, that's right. They keep the light a little bit more in the valley. Well, I mean, I guess we could wrap it up there. We'll find out probably more in the next episode about whether or not this Garrett plot is for real or not. But did you have anything else you wanted to hit?
I really do think that this was all done with a lot of purpose, though. I think there was just kind of like a reseeding of these different storylines because you can't just have everybody running around killing each other all the time, right?
I mean, even though we enjoy it. The interesting, I guess the difference this time around with this kind of resetting of the chessboard is that all the players are very like physically distant. You know, like Beth seems to be primarily concerned with working for Jackie Weaver. Rip is primarily concerned with bullying an old man and a child. Casey is off the ranch. Jamie is off the ranch. Like all these people are off the ranch except for John, which I guess sets up his relationship with Summer because he's going to have tons of privacy.
Yeah. You just said, I'm a little scared because like, what are Summer's possibilities?
I think that she'll probably be like, I think that she will not get along well with Beth. I think that it'll bring up the idea of like, if we're all like away from dad, like what does he get up to? And maybe Summer's like, you know what you should do is like donate half your ranch to the Sierra Club or something.
And then Beth just beats the shit out of her.
That's right. And Beth just fucking sues the Sierra Club into
Beth is on it. By the way, you know, I think if there's one last thing is that episode 5 was almost a come down from Beth on 11. Episode 4. Like whatever you thought her ceiling was, she has smashed through that. And we are getting all-time Beth midpoint of this season.
It does also seem like, I know that she almost died in an explosion and that's probably what's impacting her mood the most. But it does seem like she is most upset by like Carter's behavior at the store. Like when she took that kid to go buy clothes. And he was like, no, I want this shirt. She was like, God damn you. Now she's been on like a 6-day bender because this kid wanted a fucking t-shirt at the store.
Which looked good on him.
Yeah, he has good taste.
It fit perfectly.
All right. I would like to issue a public apology to all cowboys at the 4-6 ranches. I do not live in Los Angeles, California. Please don't dox me and or trample me with horses. You guys look really cool. I'm going to start tucking my shirt in personally. This episode is dedicated to the three gods of Texas. Thanks, Ryan.
Good talking.